Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
My next guest is Josh Stamper. Josh initially used his artistic talent, creativity, and original ideas as a professional graphic designer. He then transitioned to inspiring students to utilize their imagination and creative expression in public education. Being unsuccessful as a student growing up, Josh never expected to be back in the classroom as a teacher, athletic coach, or an administrator. His struggles as a student spawned a passion to challenge the education model, push the boundaries of traditional learning, and explore new innovative ideas. Josh has been a middle school assistant principal in North Texas for the past 8 years, where he served at 4 campuses in 2 school districts. In addition to his current administrative position, Josh is the host of Aspire, the Leadership Development Podcast, an author, leadership coach, education presenter, and podcast network manager for the Teach Better team. Welcome to the podcast, Josh.
Thank you so much, Dana. It's a pleasure to be on there with you today.
Well, tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
Oh my goodness. Well, in my book, I have a lot of trenches, but I'm not going to go into all of them. But I think the main piece in my leadership journey was when I became a dean of students. So prior to that, I was an art teacher and a coach. And thankfully, I had an amazing mentor who gave me a lot of opportunities. So I had an understanding of what the dean position was, and then also what the assistant principal role was within that district, and what I thought was on every campus. Little did I know, the new campus that I went to when I got promoted was in a different city, different area. Even though it was the same district, the needs of that campus was just very, very different. And so it was a Title I school. So the community just had different needs that I wasn't aware of. And then also just didn't have the experience to handle. So in addition to that, it was a really large school. And, you know, I was working with students who were absent a lot. There was, you know, fights every third day. There were drugs. I mean, you name it, it happened that school year. And I was in a school that was more affluent, and we just didn't have those type of behavioral issues going on. And so for me, it was eye-opening and then a little overwhelming, because as a dean of students here in North Texas, it's, you're in charge of all of student discipline. So, you know, any student behavior comes across your desk, and you're supposed to be taking care of that. So in addition to that, though, I had every other role. You know, I was still observing teachers, and I was, you know, in charge of the safety and security of the campus. And there were a lot of other roles that I had to take care of as an administrator. And I had to take care of, you know, almost 1,300 students at the middle school level. So I was getting burnt out, and I attribute most of the white hair on my beard from that school year as a dean of students of just being completely just like throw my hands up in the air. What else am I going to do? Because at that point I was just suspending kids left and right, ISS, OSS, you know, going to special programs. Some students, you know, going all the way up to the juvenile school for, you know, the behaviors that we were having on campus. So I didn't really like feel like I had made a difference in these students' lives. I felt like I was just kind of pushing them out into the neighborhoods, and they were to survive in whatever environment they were in. And I was just pushing them into the community to get into more trouble. And so at that point, I actually thought about leaving education as a whole. Like, I'm good. I'm done. Obviously I'm not making a difference. In the same time frame, my wife and I decided to foster, to adopt. So we became foster parents for the first time and had to go through a whole host of training. So anyone that hasn't been a part of foster care, you have to go and be taught a bunch of different strategies, and there's a lot of requirements that are required to be a parent. I will tell you, I was not in a very good mindset. I was already a parent of 2. So I was like, why am I having to do these classes? Me and my wife have been successful so far. We know how to do this. And I was in a bad mood when I went to this training, but it was actually one of the turning points, not only as a parent, but as an administrator, was with the trauma-informed strategies with Professor Purvis at TCU. And it was a full day of just learning about how, you know, the brain is, how it develops, but then also what happens biologically to not only our brain, but to our bodies, as far as when trauma is introduced to our lives. And not only like in our everyday life, but also in utero, you know, a lot of our kids, you know, have traumas that occur when they're in the womb. Kids that are, have come in our home, we've had 6 placements over the last 10 years, and all of them have had some form of trauma in your utero. So, you know, and those things are still issues that they're dealing with today. So it was just one of those like eye-opening experiences, not knowing all of these different things, but then also on the back end of it, it was getting a lot of strategies, to kind of work with students and talking about communication and the relationship building and things like that, that I started to think, well, how can I utilize this information as an administrator? Because what I'm doing right now is not working. So is there something else out there that might help me be more successful? And with that turned into my like digging into alternative strategies, and that was restorative practices. And so I really like just try to consume as much as possible of like, what is this? You know, it was in the prison system with restorative justice. Now it's being brought into the school. What does restorative practices look like? How can I potentially, you know, bring that on to change the behaviors of our students instead of just punish, punish, punish all the time? And thankfully I made such a, I guess, impression on the district that I got moved up the following year. So I got promoted to be an assistant principal at a new campus, kind of a similar situation where it's kind of like half and half, right? We had, it was a bigger school, but a lot of the same issues in this community as my previous school. So I was able to then start to like really hone in on restorative practices. And that's where like my journey and my passion started with that subject matter. And like how I started to like push that onto the campus as far as like changing a mindset, instead of just like traditional behavioral practices.
Yeah. And that's something that does take a little bit of time in implementing that at the school level. So when you started at that new campus as AP, how long do you think it took kind of before everybody was embracing that? And, you know, I think you've said you moved to a new campus since, and it was that something you helped implement there as well?
Yeah, you're right, Dana. It does take a lot of time. And what I did was a little bit different. I had seen kind of that top-down directive initiative before and seen it fail miserably. And I didn't want it to be that way. I don't know about you, but like when there are like book studies and things where there's initiatives potentially going on and there's kind of this warm up of like, here we're introducing this subject matter and they kind of get a pulse of things. Typically with any change, there's a little bit of pushback. And when it comes to like grades and discipline, I've seen the most passionate and drop down fights happen, you know, on those two subject matters. And so I didn't want it to be one of those things that I just said, you have to do this. And so for me, when I was an assistant principal, the first time at my last campus was I created what's called a relationship action team, because I didn't want it to be focused on student discipline, because there's other components to that. I wanted to talk about the proactive piece, which is the relationship building, just as much as the reactive piece of like, how are we going to teach the students once they've made a poor choice? Mm-hmm. And so what I did was I kind of put it out there to folks of like, hey, we're going to start building this. If you're interested about learning more, this is what we're going to be talking about. You're welcome to come. And then I also did some recruiting. I did some recruiting of like, I know these people are like-minded and probably have kind of similar values and probably believe in something similar. So, hey, I'm going to come and personally invite you. And so when we first started, we only had like 7 people of a staff of 70 teachers.
Okay.
But by the time we got done, we had close to 40 people in that relationship action team. So what our purpose was to learn together. And I was one that was learning just as much as everybody else in the group. But then also once we started to implement some of these practices, to be able to then say to our neighbor, hey, you know, I've seen success in this, you know, do you want to check it out? And start inviting people to come join the relationship action team as we went. So kind of a recruitment process also, but not just a, hey, there's just this pie in the sky, you know, theory out there. You want to come, you know, learn about it. It's, we've got some actionable steps. We've tried it out. This is the result, the evidence. Present that, and then, you know, see if they wanted to learn with us also. So that's kind of how I embraced it, you know, for the first year. And then since we got more and more folks involved, then it started to be a campus initiative the following year, because we had more than half the teachers already in this group. They're already learning, and we were starting to get momentum. and it started to be that the campus at least wanted to learn more about it. Not that they fully embraced it. It probably didn't take until year four where we really had an implementation and where we connected to like our PBIS model and some of those other, like our campus improvement plan. I mean, so we were attaching it to other pieces. So it was all intertwined, you know, because it was already a part of our campus culture, you know, changing the discipline matrix to kind of work with that. So we had like an outline for our staff to understand, starting to talk about like social emotional practices too, like how can we do check-ins and some of these other practices. So even though they're categorized as different things, they're all intertwined together to make up a whole, so that we're like, like I said earlier, like we have the proactive strategies. And then as far as administrators, we've got the reactive, like the restorative piece also on the back end.
Yeah. And I really like how you word that, proactive versus reactive. And I think, you know, when this episode comes out late April around then, there are a lot of, you know, teams that are thinking about what they're going to use next year and implementation. I know kind of with the last couple of years, implementation of programs has been on pause. Teachers have, you know, complained a lot about exhaustion, but I think as people plan for next school year and over the summer, you know, be it trainings that staff might want to go to, you know, I think this is kind of a, you're kind of giving a blueprint, let it be, and people can also access your book. Yeah. But you know, of how you have worked in your school to implement a restorative practices. And I think that's something that a lot of schools are still looking to do. There's, you know, schools that have been doing it for, you know, 5 to 10 years, but even in the district I work in, there's a lot of people that have maybe tried, but they haven't been able to fully implement, or, you know, there's been a lot of just teacher, you know, exhaustion this year and things like that. So definitely, I think this is, you know, your experience is one that I think is great to follow. And I wanted to add that you and your wife, Leslie, have written some blog posts about trauma-informed practices. And you have those listed on your website, The Face of Trauma, The Language of Behavior, and The History of Trauma. If you'd like to just highlight one of those posts and a little bit about what you discuss and, you know, what some educators might learn from those.
Yeah. So the language of behavior, I'm going to touch on that one because I think that was one of our first ones that we put out there. But it's something I speak on, and I actually use that as the title that of my presentation. And it has a lot to do with just how student behavior is a language in itself. We think of like when a student needs something that they'll just communicate that with their words. But a lot of times the students don't even understand the emotions that are inside of them and the needs that they have. And so a lot of times they'll act out. And especially in a middle school with adolescent, a lot of times their emotions are everywhere. You know, their brain is growing just as much as a 2-year-old. I mean, there's just a lot of things going on biologically with them. And so they typically don't even know until you kind of sit them down and let them kind of unwind and de-escalate to understand like truly what is the need. And you have to really take time to dig to figure out, you know, is there potentially something happening at home, or is there something going on with their peers? You know, maybe there's a need, like maybe they don't have enough food at, you know, throughout the day. There's a lot of factors, right? But to be able to look at the behavior and kind of use that as a tool and a language to understand that there is something going on. You know, I really hate, this is a pet peeve of mine, of like someone saying, oh, there's a bad kid. You know, that's a bad kid. There's not a bad kid. It's like this child just needs something, right? So what is it, what can we do to kind of extract that from them? And sometimes they may not have the words to present that to us, especially an elementary student. So, you know, what can we use to kind of understand what it is that they need? So the great thing about writing with Leslie is, you know, she's got the parent perspective within the blog post, where I've got the educational side of it. So regardless of where you are, if you're just a foster parent or someone with a child, really of a parent, you know, you can definitely gain something from that. Or if you're an educator looking to get more information about potentially students that have trauma within their lives, you know, this might be a good resource also.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. You can find out more at teachbetter.com/podcasts. Now let's get back to the episode.
I think those in the show notes. So Talk to me a little bit about some of the empathy just strategies. I know we talked about restorative practices, but in your book, you talk about empathy. And that's something, you know, I did a professional development in beginning of the school year in 2018 on that. And I think, you know, that was based on Michelle Burba's book, Unselfie. But I think empathy is something that's kind of, I would say, fallen a little bit by the wayside in the last 2 years. And I think having more empathy for both our students and for colleagues, and just for the situations that we might not be aware of, right? Also helps us use those restorative practices and have that language of understanding like you talked about.
Yeah. So, you know, in the book, I talk about empathy as being a characteristic that is needed to be successful. And I think that is true for any educator. And I think you made a lot of good points, Dana. So the last 2 years have been crazy hard for everybody involved in education. And I know that our patience is wearing thin because we have so many initiatives and, you know, everybody wants it to go back to normal, whatever that looks like. I don't even know what that term means anymore, but I know that we have gone through, both adults and students have gone through, a lot of trials and tribulations the last couple of years. And, you know, with the pandemic, you know, we've seen a lot of job loss. We've seen a lot of death in our communities. And there are things, divorce rates, you know, are skyrocketing too. I mean, there's just a lot of factors that are going on. And, you know, when you look at areas of trauma and like what things are occurring, you know, when there's high levels of stress, typically bad things happen. And yeah. So we're just starting to uncover all of these different things, you know, students, like record numbers of kids that are contemplating suicide, you know, so, you know, we've got all these different things. And if we don't empathy, if you don't have that piece there and you don't put yourself in their shoes, then it's just, oh, you need to be perfect in this setting, regardless of what your outside situation is. And we just can't have that expectation. And I know it's difficult to be in the role and have people potentially have poor behavior, both from adults and students, but at the same time, like, there's a reason, right? That's the same thing as the blog posts and the presentations that we do. There's always a reason. It's just a matter of taking the time to figure that out. And so, you know, the other day, like, we had a staff member and something was just off and I couldn't figure out what was going on. And then once, you know, I had that conversation with her, you know, there was just a ton going on in the home life that wasn't shared to anybody else. And so, like, if you didn't take the time to sit down and actually ask that person, same with a student, then you just assume like, oh, they're just, you know, not enjoying being a teacher. You know, they don't care about the job. I mean, you start to make the narrative yourself because you haven't taken the time to actually, you know, find out the true reason. And then, you know, once you start uncovering, okay, well, now I can start making a plan of like, what can we do to help you be more successful? Right. Yeah. And the same with a student, like if a student, you know, walks out of class and that's unprecedented for that student, and that's something that's obviously odd. Well, that behavior is telling you that something else is going on. So let's have a conversation instead of just going, okay, well, you know, go straight to ISS, you know, and then you stick them in a room. They sit there for a long period of time, right? All day. And then you just insert them back in the classroom and you say, well, okay, I expect you to behave like you're supposed to. And, you know, if parents are going through a divorce and, you know, maybe there's a domestic dispute the night before, maybe the parents were yelling all night and they didn't get any sleep. I mean, there's so many other factors that could be involved that we don't take in effect. And so, like, as a leader, I have to have that empathy to take the time to sit down and say, what's going on? And then once I discover what that is, okay, now I can start to put things in place to make sure that the student has, you know, what they need to learn. Because honestly, if all those things happen the night before, it doesn't matter what you do, that kid's not learning that next day. It's just the nature of the beast. I mean, if they're sitting with 2 hours of sleep and just witness something that will be in their brain for the rest of their life, I mean, they're not learning about algebra the next day. It's just reality of it. So, like, what can you do as a school to make sure that, you know, you're setting them up to make sure that they're emotionally stable so that way they can get back in the classroom as soon as possible to make sure that they learn the subject matter?
I think that's so important to, you know, have. I mean, we talk a lot about self-care, but it's also just as we kind of think about, you know, our roles for next school year. I think spring is a time where people are reevaluating if they're going to stay in their career role or leave education. And, you know, but if we don't take care of ourselves, you know, we're not able to take care of others, but our students need it. And if we're in a leadership position, our staff needs it. And there's a lot of staff out there who don't say, you know, they don't feel it's their place at school to say anything. And they might not even if you talk to them. But I think just realizing that they're, you know, a lot of people are going through difficult things. And whether or not we're at the endemic phase, you know, and that's not a big issue. There's people that, you know, there are people that get diagnosed with cancer. There's, you know, deaths in families all the time, divorces, like you said. So, yeah, very important. I wanted to shift gears a little bit and talk about your podcast, the Aspire podcast. So you've been doing this for about 4 years. And tell me kind of what led you to start podcasting. And now you're kind of the podcast guru for the teacher. So kind of tell me a little bit about your role as the podcast network manager as well.
Yeah, I'd love to. Thank you. It's kind of crazy. So, you know, in my last district, I had this opportunity to build a program with four other principals on leadership development. And I loved it. I loved it so much. We did it for 2 years. It was called the Cadre, the Leadership Cadre. And it was this really cool program where principals got to select people to be a part of it. And it could be someone that had no leadership experience whatsoever, or maybe they were in a master's program looking to become an administrator someday. So it was just like, if you had leadership traits that, you know, were identified, you could ask them to be a part of this program. And so we took them through a full year. It was like 8 sessions, full day sessions, and we brought them all over the district. And we had different people from the district leadership teams come out and speak with them. And we just did this really fun, very interactive session with them each time. And it went so well that the district actually took it from us and they built their own program. And I was really longing to do stuff with aspiring leaders. So I went and visited Todd Nasloney when he was a principal in Nova Soda, and he was doing a podcast with Adam Welcome with the Kids Deserve It podcast. And when I came in, he was already in session. So I quietly sat in the background and watched him work his magic. And as soon as he was done, I just like peppered him with 1,000 questions because I was very intrigued. So at the time, I only listened to sports podcasts. You could probably see the sports memorabilia behind me. I know that's not going to be any surprise to you, but that was really my only reason to jump on and listen to a podcast. So when I was thinking about, okay, an educational podcast, I started asking him about, well, what do you think about doing it for aspiring leaders? And he was like, yeah, you definitely should do that. So fast forward like 6 months later, I finally got enough courage to, you know, kind of get the mic ready and start recording, and just started asking different education leaders that I followed on Twitter. Todd was the first guest. That was an easy one. But, you know, from there, it was just like people that I read their book potentially or listened to them on a podcast and just reached out and said, hey, would you be willing to be on the Aspire podcast? And, you know, they a lot of times they would say yes. And it's been just such an amazing blessing to listen to them speak and, you know, share their wisdom on what it is to be a leader. And there are so many leadership positions out there. So I don't want anyone to think you have to be an administrator to listen to the podcast or to become a leader. Honestly, any educator is a leader. That's the premise of my book. That's the premise of the podcast. And, you know, just trying to get every type of person in education to be able to speak and share how they're affecting and inspiring other people. And so that's what the Aspire podcast is all about. And, you know, I have some like spinoff episodes. I do the Aspire mailbag with Jeff Agarius and the Teach Better team, where we take questions from people, or I got the Aspire to Rise with Sarah Johnson, where we actually do a coaching session with an aspiring leader. So there's some different spinoff episodes in there, but for the most part, it's myself and a guest like we're doing today. And then as far as the Teach Better podcast network, that's my baby. That's the engine that's been running for the last, I don't know, year and a half. And, you know, we started from the ground up with the Teach Better team, and Jeff Gargas, you know, during one of those Aspire mailbags was like, hey, we're thinking about doing a podcast network. Do you know anyone that would be interested? And I was like, yeah, me, I want to take that on. So I always wanted to build a podcast network. I had been thinking about it for years, and then also, you know, having my podcast on one, just because, you know, as a podcaster, it's similar to leadership is, you know, we get in these roles and you're kind of in your own silo. And it's nice to be able to be in a community with other people and to kind of bounce things off of. And so that's kind of what the podcast network is. And we're almost to 40 podcasts now, which is crazy to think of the amount of growth that has occurred. But it's just so fun to connect with people like yourself, Dana, to find these amazing podcasts to bring onto the network to associate, and then also you know, to, you know, have trainings or different conversations to learn and to grow within our craft. So I'm excited about the potential of where this is going. I'm excited about the Teach Better Conference too, and Podcasters Row, and getting people out there to join forces. So I don't want to spoil too much, but we've got some pretty fun, exciting things coming for that too. But yeah, the network is amazing, and I'm just so fortunate to be connected with such phenomenal podcasters.
Yeah. And, you know, I connected with you, I would say, a couple of months into the network starting, and, you know, got the podcast on the network, last summer. And, you know, a couple of the people I've interviewed for my podcast have, you know, asked me how to get on the Teach Better podcast network. So that's, you know, they've gotten on there as well. And, you know, I think, yeah, that the conference you mentioned, you know, that's in, October, and I registered for the early bird and submitted my proposal for a session, but people are welcome to register.
That's awesome.
At any time. It's in Akron, Ohio, correct?
It is. Yeah. Akron, Ohio.
Yes.
Home of LeBron James.
Excited about that. And in your podcast, you're up to like 180 episodes, something like that. Yeah. So I will definitely link that in the show notes. And, you know, I think it's also, cool that there is a people that are on the podcast network, there is like a meeting, a mastermind meeting that's held, so people can, you know, share ideas and their experiences and questions if they're new to podcasting, and you know, that's kind of that community, like you said.
Yes,
a lot of podcasters don't necessarily you know, have a place, you know, to kind of ask others, so that I think that's a great opportunity for people in the network. Well, as we wrap up today's episode, out of everything we talked about, what's one thing in particular you'd like listeners to remember?
Oh, goodness. Yeah, we talked about a lot. So, yeah, I think we talked about the empathy piece and the strategies. You know, if I can go deeper with the restorative practices piece, you know,
definitely.
We talked about the relationship building, which is huge. And we do that in a lot of different ways, but the restorative practices piece, I really would hope that anyone listening, if you do anything with student discipline in a classroom or in a campus level, I'd love for you to at least dig into that a little bit more. Right now, I feel like, you know, that term has kind of is turned into kind of a condescending term, or a negative, unfortunately. And I know that, you know, when the pandemic started, a lot of people were talking about empathy and giving grace a lot, because a lot of people were going through things. But I feel like as we get farther away from that, you know, we've come back to some of those traditional practices. And so restorative practices is not in place of a consequence. I just want folks to not understand that. Restorative is about fixing what was broken, right? So if that's a relationship or maybe something physical, but like building a plan as a teach piece done, so that way the student is truly understanding who it affected and what is the decision moving forward. And it does take additional time. It's not easy, but as far as the data and the evidence afterwards, I can assure that you will see a greater dividend by putting in that work than just, you know, putting them in ISS or sending them home. Okay. So, I know I don't want to like take an hour, because I could easily talk about a lot of stuff right now as far as restorative practice. But I think if you're listening to this podcast, I would just, you know, charge you to go in and just dive in a little bit further and see what is entailed with that as far as those practices. So that way you're able to, you know, provide what's needed for those students in regards to teaching, instead of just, like I said before, punishing.
Yeah. And it can look different ways. And I think in the pre-chat, you talked to me a little bit about how it looks on your campus. The restorative circles don't necessarily have to be at a certain time of day or in the homeroom. It could be, you know, when the teacher deems necessary. They could do the check-in in the morning, right? You also have a survey. You said that your teachers use, you know, is that something they use daily with the students? Talk to me a little bit about that survey as well.
Yeah, so that's the check-in piece. So, you know, a lot of times teachers do a check-in, but it can look different ways, right? So some of our teachers, they'll throw up like a crazy, you know, cat meme one where you pick a number based on the crazy faces that are on there. And it's kind of a fun thing for middle school students. So the check-in with what we talked about was a Google survey. With that is, and you can set it up different ways, but the main piece for it is that the student has an opportunity to communicate to the teacher. We're not communicating in a large group. So they're not sharing their business, right? It's just to the teacher. And there's certain ways that you can put it on there. So there's certain words and things that, you know, if they're at a certain level, for instance, let's say you use emotional colors, right? So like if they're in a red, then, you know, that's what's pinging the teacher or flags it. So the teacher understands, okay, this student has said this, so I need to reach out to something else. The other piece to it also is that they have a resource section. So for instance, let's say like something similar to what we talked about, where maybe parents are having a fight the night before and they're really disturbed about that, and they're not able to learn. Well, within that Google Doc, it also says, do you need to see an administrator? Do you need to see a counselor and some other resources, right? So they can click that, and that way the teacher understands, okay, well, this student obviously is dealing with something. I don't know specifics, but I also know that they need to see someone other than myself. So a lot of times teachers will think they have to solve all the issues within the classroom. Yeah. And sometimes it goes beyond them, right? So if the student needs to see a counselor at that time, we allow them to do that. So it's kind of right now, the way it's set up on our campus, it is teacher directed. So like it's on them as far as what their check-in looks like. So they need to have something. It's just a little bit different in each classroom.
Yeah. And it's definitely important to make sure that you're having the students communicate. I think, you know, at the high school, middle school level, it looks different than elementary, where kids might do the morning circle time, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, having a Google Doc, having a way where students can share anonymously, or knowing that it's coming to the teacher, but they're collecting email addresses, but, you know, if they feel comfortable sharing, and, you know, the teacher is able to then get them to the right person if need be. So yeah, really important. And that's where I was going to ask you, where can people connect with you and find you online? Because I'm sure a lot of people listening want to know more about how the restorative practices work. And
so on Twitter and Instagram, it's Joshua_Stamper. And then my website is joshstamper.com. So you can reach me in any of those facets. And of course, if you have any questions with restorative practices or trauma-informed strategies, anything like that, or even aspiring leadership, you know, if you're going through your journey right now, you're thinking about becoming a leader someday and you have questions, definitely reach out. And I don't say that lightly. I will not ghost you. So if you need any information from me, please reach out.
Great. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on the podcast today. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you, Dana. It's been a pleasure to speak with you.
Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it. And if this episode resonates, especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me at Out of Trenches PC.